Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio, this fifth day of January, 2024. My guest was here and then disappeared. I hope she'll call back in. Janet Phelan, very interesting woman. I featured her before. Meanwhile, let me say, I checked in early with a studio and was listening to the conversation that preceded this program. Very, very good stuff about migrant invasion, how they're being, bused to New Jersey, and because New York has taken measures to stop buses from bringing migrants into New York, that they put them on trains, that New York has a law that won't allow refusal to shelter, that guarantees a shelter to anyone who comes into New York. And that's, of course, that's something they're paying for big time now, big time. Very serious, very troubling. In fact, they're saying they got like 400 hotels have been turned into migrant hotels, and they're going to be reduced to flop houses. I think that's absolutely 100% correct. The only sense I can make is that George Soros bought the Democrat Party. He bought it. He bought the DNC. It's a private company. I tell you, it looks to me like George Soros bought it, lock, stock, and barrel. Because as I've been explaining, if you assume Bibi Netanyahu is our commander-in-chief and is responsible for all our foreign policy, all of that makes sense. Because we're all out for Israel. We don't give a damn about American lives or the American people or America's national security or America's borders. All we care about is defending Israel and perpetrating a genocide on the Palestinian people. And that's because our Congress and our administration are Israeli-occupied territory. Back in 2008, my first political speech, Ron Paul Freedom Rally, 15 April, on the grass outside of the Capitol, I gave a talk that would later be published under the title 9/11 and the Neocon Agenda, where I explain that no dual citizen should ever be placed in a policy-shaping or decision-making position within the American government, because you cannot know that their allegiance to the other state would outweigh their allegiance to the United States. And, of course, we know now, because 3 years later, Cynthia McKinney revealed on press TV, Iranian television, that new candidates, new arrivals in Washington are asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel even ahead of the interests of the United States. These are new members of the United States Congress signing a pledge. And virtually every single one does that. Why? Because they care more about campaign contributions so they can be reelected than they do performing their duties on behalf of their constituents. It's grotesque. There it is. It's a fact of the matter. And you look at the Biden admin and you see all the key positions are similarly occupied by dual citizens. Janet Yellen at Treasury, Alejandro Mayorkas, Homeland Security, Merrick Garland, Attorney General, Antony Blinken, Secretary of State. They're all dual U.S.-Israeli citizens, and they're all operating on behalf of Israel. And they're being very open about it. They're being very, very open about it. There's nothing subtle about what's going on here. And I'm delighted that my guest has joined me. I'm going to begin with a couple of stories and seek her opinion on that. We are going to begin with observations. NATO planning a false flag attack in the Black Sea to launch World War III. This is from Reese Report. Check this out. Let me see if I...
Your government has been guilty of false flag operations to foment war. America has been guilty of several, but here are just a few. Civilian passengers were murdered when a torpedo hit the Lusitania. Investigations revealed that explosives were inside the ship, which was operated by war profiteer J.P. Morgan. This event is what brought Americans, who were not previously interested in getting involved, into World War I, where they lost over 100,000 sons and daughters. They were also not interested in getting involved in World War II, but after breaking Japanese encryption codes, the U.S. government knew of their plans to attack Pearl Harbor, but the big banks were funding both sides and expected massive profits, so they let it happen to encourage Americans to sacrifice nearly 500,000 of their children in the Second World War. In August of 1964, the USS Maddox and the Turner Joy knowingly lied about being fired upon by North Vietnamese ships. For 2 hours, they fired at nothing and maneuvered as if under attack. President Johnson was aware of this deception, but kept it secret to initiate war against North Vietnam and to sacrifice over 50,000 Americans. About 3,000 people were murdered on 9/11 in the most notorious false flag in U.S. history. This was used as a catalyst for the endless destruction of several nations that continues today. Professor Stephen Starr, associate of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, was recently on Russia's Solovyov Live, where he discussed a plan being suggested by NATO forces in Germany that stinks of plans for a false flag operation to usher in World War III. They have suggested a scenario wherein Russia sinks an American cruiser in the Black Sea, followed by the United States attacking Russian ships with nuclear warheads, which would then be followed by a Russian nuclear strike against NATO headquarters and a major U.S. nuclear attack on all of Russia. They suggested more than 3,000 strikes within 1 hour and the destruction of all major cities in Europe and the United States. Professor Starr said this would result in 150 million tons of smoke and soot that would block out 70% of the sunlight in the Northern Hemisphere and last about 10 years. It's important to note that it's been NATO forces alone who have been provoking war with Russia for decades, surrounding their border with missile systems and bioweapons labs, and overthrowing Ukraine with CIA color revolutions. The facts show that Russia has been given no choice but to defend themselves against deceptive Western aggression. The anti-human globalist forces that hold a firm grip on America are clearly trying to destroy it from within. If they wanted America to win a world war, then they would not be murdering U.S. troops with the deadly COVID shots and and they would not be manipulating them to castrate themselves under the guise of transgenderism. The globalists want the United States to be plundered and destroyed, but they need a scapegoat to blame it on, and they've clearly chosen Russia for that role. During the American Revolution, Catherine the Great of Russia unofficially supported the colonies by trading with them. Russian ships began delivering hemp, sail linen, and iron to American ports as early as 1763. During the War of 1812, Russia attempted to join as a third-party mediator in support of American independence. In 1863, Russia sent military fleets to New York and San Francisco to put pressure on the British and fight them if necessary. They patrolled the American shores for 10 months. This Russian support of a sovereign America is undoubtedly what led to the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, when the country fell into communist rule for 69 years. Today, Russia has asked for peace, but the evil powers that want endless war cannot survive unity between the East and the West. False flag operations are the modus operandi of the globalists, and war, mass murder, and division is all they desire. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Well, Reese, in my opinion, is quite a brilliant guy, and he's doing a whole lot here to explain what's really going on. Janet, you have an interest in such a range of interest of issues. Tell us your thoughts about the scenario of a false flag in the Black Sea in order to justify a NATO all-out response attack on Russia. Your thoughts.
Well, I want to point out that there was already a false flag to jumpstart the war with Israel and Hamas, and that was Hamas breaching the fence. Anyone who knows anything about the technology that was launched by Israel to surveil and guard that pivotal fence knows that this breach was simply, you know, which went on for hours without IDF response, was simply not possible. Also, there were apparently a group of soldiers who saw Hamas prior to the fence being breached, saw Hamas doing like exercises in preparation of breaching the fence, and they reported that duly up the line of command and were ignored. So it does appear to me that we've got a false flag that has already taken place in order to enable this war with Hamas and Israel. Now, I'm not such an expert on Russian issues. I'm paying a lot more attention to what's going on with Israel and the entrance into the situation with Iran. Interestingly enough, at the very time that Iran reputedly has gotten this nuke that it says will, you know, wipe Israel off the map. So I think we've got an up and running situation that may actually eventuate into a world war situation already.
Janet, please elaborate on that last point about Iran having acquired nukes. I think that's excellent. Of course, historically, they've been opposed to nuclear weapons. They've disavowed wanting to have them. I have felt they needed them, and that it would be a way of introducing a mutually assured destruction scenario in the Middle East, which worked so effectively during the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union. Do we know the origin of their nuclear weapon possession today?
Well, you know, there is a lot of information that is pointing to their having acquired this. I know that about 2 years ago, there was a public statement that they would have this within 2 years. Now, more recently, There have been public statements made by U.S. officials that they'll have one like within 30 days, imminently. So I think that we can safely say that Iran is either on the verge of having a nuclear weapon or already has one. So given the fact that the defense could not have been breached under normal circumstances, something had to have happened here. I use the word collusion on the part of Israel at the very time that Iran ostensibly has this nuclear weapon. We see how Iran is getting drawn into this war more and more. I believe just yesterday I saw some reports that facilities in Iran were attacked. Iran is blaming both the U.S. and Israel for this. There's also, of course, the Hezbollah connection. But Iran is featuring more and more prominently in this scenario. And I believe that this is by design.
Well, I certainly agree with you about the October 7th. Several former IDF explained it just wasn't possible that the IDF was unaware of breaching of the fence, which occurred at some seven different locations. It had to be allowed to happen. And of course, this is just what Netanyahu wanted, was to have a pretext for the genocide in Gaza to be at war. He felt the country would unify around him, although he'd been in deep, deep political trouble over the corruption prosecutions. He's trying to revise the Israeli constitution to weaken the judiciary, all in a self-serving way. Indeed, even Ehud Olmert has declared that this war is up for and by Bibi Netanyahu to benefit himself, which I find highly ironic, because it was he and Netanyahu together who were the brain trust who designed a plan for 9/11 back in the late 1980s in order to justify U.S. troops in the, active in the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region, which Paul Craig Roberts views as being extended now by the conflict with Gaza to create the greater Israel. How do you see this? I mean,
well,
obviously,
I have to disagree with some of the conclusions here, because I think that Bibi is a globalist player, and I don't believe that this war was launched to create solely genocide in Gaza. I think this war was launched at the very time that Iran has this nuclear weapon in order to destroy Israel. And there are so many signs. I know this is, you know, an unusual perception, but if you look back through history, if you look at the actual real relationship between the U.S. and Israel, which was very well laid out by John Loftus, the former DOJ prosecutor, in his groundbreaking book, The Secret War Against the Jews. You know, this was also echoed by Henry Kissinger, who declared that Israel would cease to exist. I believe he gave the end date of 2020. We're running a little late here. But I think that this, we're going to see further involvement with Iran to the destruction and detriment of Israel. And I think that the Palestinians are unfortunately collateral damage here. Their situation is being used to create more and more concern and condemnation of Israel worldwide. And I don't believe they're going to survive what Iran plans for Israel either. So we've got the genocide of Gaza, we've got the genocide of Israel. That's what I think, Jim.
Well, I'm sure glad to have your opinion. Now, my view has been that Iran had more than sufficient capacity to annihilate Israel, even without nuclear weapons. Frankly, I would welcome their possession by Iran, which is perhaps the greatest peace-loving nation in the world today, having not launched a war of aggression against any other state since 1775. And for those whose constitutional history may be in need of refreshing, we only ratified the Constitution in 1778. George Washington elected our first president in 1779. So for longer than the United States has existed as a constitutional republic, Iran has not launched a war of aggression against any other state. It did, of course, defend itself against the onslaught of Iraq, which the elder Bush encouraged to take place. And it cost about $1 million on both the Iranian and the Iraqi side, but that was self-defense. Iran, it seems to me, a country I visited in 2014 and for which I have immense admiration, has shown great dignity throughout here, declaring it's not going to attack Israel, but if it were itself to be attacked, that it would not hesitate in responding. I'd be interested whether you agree with my assessment that the war in Ukraine was really to create a new Israel in Ukraine, that most of the present-day occupants are not descendants of the tribe of Judah, but are actually Khazarians, that the region is now modern-day Ukraine, and they'd like to return to create the new Israel in accordance with Kissinger prediction. Yes, 10 years hence, and that would have been 2020, there'll be no more Israel. But the defeat of the Ukrainian army, of NATO and the U.S. by Russia, has caused them, in my opinion now, to decide they're simply going to clean up all of Israel, get rid of all the Palestinians, take control of the West Bank, Gaza, annex, exploit the oil resources that properly belong to the Palestinians, which are vast, estimate at $500 billion minimally, build this Ben-Gurion Canal right through the heart of Gaza, and in otherwise ways expand their influence in the Middle East, where they're hoping to egg on the United States to attack Iran. I have no doubt that Bibi would like nothing better. Your thoughts?
Well, I think there's a lot of wishful thinking and fantasy going into this analysis here, Jim. You know, I think it's going to be very difficult for Israel to establish a new Israel when Israel itself is destroyed in this war. And I think that's what we're facing. I'm not really an expert on the Russian situation. As I said previously, I'm spending most of my attention on this escalating situation with Israel.
Yes, yes, yes. No, I think you misunderstood that the war in Ukraine was to create the opportunity for a new Israel that was going to be exploited, that Israel basically was going to, the population, which is descendant of the Khazarians, was going to move to their ancestral homeland, but it's been defeated by Russia. They no longer have that option. There's nothing wishful or fantasy about this, in my judgment. This was the plan, but it's been defeated by Russia. So now what they're doing is trying to, you know, clean up Palestine, where the Palestinians have lived for, by my estimate, perhaps 2,000 to even 3,000 years. The Israelis, of course, being new arrivals, they're 75-year occupants, but they have been vicious. They have been sadistic. And the way in which the United States is supporting them has transformed our standing in the community of nations so that we now, together with Israel, are without doubt the most despised nation in the world today. Your thoughts?
Well, I think there are layers here. And I think that the plan here, I'm reiterating what I said earlier, I think the plan is the destruction of Israel. And I think that there are collusive elements involved in higher up in Israel and definitely in the United States. I actually predicted this war with Hamas. Well, I didn't name Hamas, but I predicted this war in Israel in my 2014 book, Exile. I also predicted the pandemic, and everything is unfolding, unfortunately, you know, very close to my predictions. And I'm concerned at the fact that this fence breaching is not getting enormous attention. I mean, it couldn't have happened. It simply couldn't have happened without somebody in power in Israel just, like, you know, turning off the cameras. I mean, it could not have happened. So we have a situation which is escalating rapidly, and I'm afraid that the predictions I made in 2014 are actually unfolding before us. I know we disagree on this, Jim, but this is my perception of what we're seeing.
Well, I'm not at all sure we disagree. I am very interested in your projections of where things go from here.
Well, you know, as I mentioned, just yesterday, Iran is stating that it was attacked by, you know, on Israel / the United States. I mean, this is what would be necessary in order for Iran to get further involved in this war. I mean, we already know that they have proxies in the region through which they're acting, like Hezbollah. So, but if Iran is directly attacked by the U.S. or Israel, or says that it is, then it has all the justification it needs to get further involved here. And I'm afraid that we are actually, you know, I'm not much of a Bible thumper in terms of the predictions that are, you know, being made in the New Testament, Book of Revelations, but I do see certain things unfolding before us, and it's horrifying. It is simply horrifying, because this war go ahead, please.
I'm so delighted to have you here. We got a break, and then we'll continue our conversation with Janet Phelan. We'll be right back.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio. This fifth day of January 2024 with my featured guest, Janet Phelan, who's been anticipated that COVID and other of the events that have taken place here. And Janet, my inference would be from your observations that you expect Iran to retaliate against Israel and basically wipe it out. What will be the consequences? How will Israel respond to any attacks? What will the U.S. do as a consequence? Please, I'm very interested in your scenario about the near future.
Well, you know, we're all flies on the wall trying to figure out what's really going on here. And I can't take my projections further than the destruction of Israel. I know there are those pundits among us who are saying that this war is the war to end all wars and actually the war to end the world. And I'm not able to see that far into the future. I don't know if a bomb launched against Israel by Iran will involve, of necessity, the U.S. jumping in. I don't know then if China and Russia will jump in. I don't know what we're going to see in the future. I'm just very, very concerned that all of the signposts are pointing towards, an eventual war between Israel and Iran. And I'm just very, very concerned that the consequences of this are being avoided by most pundits. And we simply aren't discussing what does this mean for the rest of the world.
Yes. Well, Bibi has gone so far as to invoke the Holocaust narrative to justify genocide in Gaza. Here's E. Michael Jones addressing. Let's check out a few minutes of what he has to say.
This is an uprising against
December evening. The things that are wrong with this world continue to be wrong, and the people who are responsible for the wrongs of this world continue to make excuses. But it's interesting to find out what type of excuses they make. So recently, Prime Minister Erdogan attacked Benjamin Netanyahu and said he was like Hitler. Oh, we're back into that story again. Everybody's got to reduce someone to Hitler. And I'm saying in this instance, no, it's not the case here. And Netanyahu is worse than Hitler. That's going to get a rise out of some people. But the point that I'm trying to make here is not to assign blame here. I don't have a moral calculus here that can calculate to something like that by simply counting dead bodies. It's not that simple. But I'd like to go to what I think was a significant admission on the part of Benjamin Netanyahu just this week, an admission of what the real hidden grammar of the war that the Israelis are waging on Gaza is. And this came as from his own mouth in an op-ed piece which appeared in the Wall Street Journal. In that editorial, Benjamin Netanyahu invoked the Holocaust narrative to justify both the social engineering of Germany and Japan and the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said that his country's military operation against the Hamas terror group will not be completed until the Gaza Strip and Palestinian society as a whole are, quote, de-radicalized, close quote, citing the example of defeated Germany and Japan after the Second World War. This is remarkably similar to what Vladimir Putin says about the Ukraine. He wants to bring about the denazification of the Ukraine. But what are we talking about here? Gaza, Netanyahu continued, will have to be de-radicalized. Schools must teach children to cherish life rather than death. And imams must cease to preach for the murder of Jews. Palestinian civil society needs to be transformed so that its people support fighting terrorism rather than funding it. And then he goes on to spill the beans here. Successful de-radicalization took place in Germany and Japan after the Allied victory in World War II. Notice he says after the Allied victory. Today, both nations are great allies of the U.S. and promote peace, stability, and prosperity in Europe and Asia. And then this is comment from the New York Post. Allied forces occupied Germany for 4 years following the defeat of the Nazis in May 1945, while the occupation of Japan following the country's surrender lasted until April 1952. So that's the standard talk about what happened after World War II, but no one is telling you the real story. If there's ever a massive story that has been completely submerged and hidden from the public, it is the story of what happened to the German people after World War II. And that began with a meeting in Potsdam. It's known as the Potsdam Conference. Potsdam is a suburb of Berlin. It took place on August, or in the summer of 1945, when Berlin is totally in ruins. And on August 2nd, 1945, the conference made this announcement. Quote, the three governments, this is America, United States, England, and the Soviet Union, recognize that the transfer to Germany of German populations remaining in Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary will have to be undertaken. They agree that any transfers that take place should be effected in an orderly and humane manner. Closed quote. This protocol extended Poland's western border 150 miles westward to a boundary marked by the Oder and Neisse rivers deep inside German territory. And in doing so, it put into motion, quote, the greatest ethnic displacement or involuntary migration of human beings in modern times, and perhaps even in the history of the human race. This is not an exaggeration.
Now, Janet, I mean, that massive displacement is what Bibi would like. I think to have all Palestinians either dead or living elsewhere, possibly in tent encampments in Egypt or somewhere in Lebanon. I've observed on more than one occasion that the final solution from the Zionist point of view would be to load all the Palestinians aboard a ship, float it out to sea, and sink it. And I think that exactly is the policy here in what Netanyahu is talking about. Citing the Holocaust is a whole different matter, an issue to which we may return, but your thought about the massive displacement and the other observations of E. Michael Jones.
Well, what I was struck with about what happened after World War II was that the Nazis were welcomed into the U.S. in droves. It wasn't just Operation Paperclip and, you know, some selected Nazi scientists. There were war criminals, noted war criminals, coming over in droves from Belarus, from Germany, from Austria. What happened was these people who were involved in the Holocaust were given safe harbor in the U.S. Now, I think you would do really well to get John Loftus on the air. He did a lot of research around this issue. He has books published particularly on this issue, and also did some nosing around into the Dulles brothers and what they were really up to in terms of their endorsement and support of the Nazi regime and how it got essentially transferred over to the U.S. This is what concerns me. You know, what concerns me is that we're being treated to a theater now. This theater is this, starts with this breaching of the fence, which could not have happened without Israel high up collusion. And it ends up with, with the insertion of Iran into the situation and very likely the destruction of Israel. And what more? There are, as I started to mention earlier, there are pundits among us who believe that this is the end of the scenario, that this war will involve the entire world and will essentially result in no more world. I don't know. I can't see that far into the future. Does everybody die, or are we just going to see some people in the Middle East, like the Israelis and the Palestinians, and very likely a bunch of Iranians die? I just don't know. But we need to really look at this scenario as very, very likely. Now, Bibi himself, I did some research on Bibi a couple of years ago. I'm very interested in high level officials and their mortgages. And I believe we've had some conversations about this, how it does appear that high level officials, including the judiciary, are actually funneling bribes through their home loans. It's a not so complicated scenario, which I've written on extensively. Now, how does this relate to Bibi? Well, at one point in time, Bibi owned a very expensive property in New York City. And I got interested in this property because he shouldn't have had ownership of this. This should have been owned by the State of Israel. And while Bibi was living in New York and working there in diplomatic circles, the property should have been in the name of the State of Israel and thereby, but it wasn't. It was in Bibi's name. And it continued in Bibi's name for some time. And I tried to pierce the ownership and get into the records of the mortgages, and I found that they were completely unavailable. So Bibi owned, it was a multi-million dollar property in New York City for far longer than his tenure in diplomatic circles there would have warranted, a property that should have been in the name of the State of Israel, and one simply cannot find out anything about loans taken out on that property, or even the the sale of that property. So I found that to be very interesting because, generally speaking, it's not so hard to pierce the ownership to find out about the loan history. Generally, it's done through the county grantor-grantee index, but not with BB. So, you know, I found this to be sort of alarming, actually. I'm not sure where his real allegiance lies. I suspect that he has globalist interests and has agreed, in a sense, to oversee the destruction of the country that he supposedly represents. I tend to believe this. Just like George Bush, too, was put in place to oversee the destruction of any semblance of rights, constitutional rights, civil liberties in the U.S. So this is what I suspect.
Which wasn't, of course, even powered by W, who is a nitwit, but by Dick Cheney, who may be the most malevolent president to ever occupy high office in the United States. My collaborative research, and we have it in the brilliant book Crossing the Rubicon, demonstrates based on publicly available sources that Dick Cheney was actually the executive director of 9/11 events from an underground bunker beneath the White House. I think that the destruction of Gaza and the brutality of the Palestinian fate at the hands of the Israelis is being well documented on the ground, you know, the leveling of all the buildings, the massive bombing that's taking place, the flooding of the tunnels, the starvation. I mean, these are all obnoxious violations of international law, the Hague Convention, the Geneva Conventions. But, of course, the Israelis believe that as a chosen people, they are responsible to a higher authority, which is God's will, that dictates they must slaughter the Palestinians. We have
I do not believe that is accurate. I do not believe that the Jews think they should slaughter the Palestinians. And you know, I just do really want to remind you that this all began because of Hamas's indiscriminate slaughter of Israelis. So according to what they call LOAC, the law of warfare, okay, there is to be exceptional attention paid to the welfare and the preservation of civilian populations. And with 20,000 plus dead in Gaza, I believe those are the figures being discussed these days. Obviously, we have a problem here. And I believe that this problem is being used heavily in propaganda to further demonize Israel so that when the bomb finally drops on Israel, people will go, well, thank goodness. And they won't think for a minute about all of the collusive activity that was actually in the background to make this happen. I want to discuss for a moment, some of the actions taken by Richard Nixon back in the 70s when he was president, because I believe that there are plans in place to further decimate targeted populations via a new pandemic, which will probably happen sometime after the WHO gets together in May of this year to ostensibly approve this worldwide pandemic treaty. Okay, So I think that, in a sense, COVID was a kind of like a not so dry run. And we're going to see one of the most horrific pandemics ever being launched against targeted populations. Now, how in the world can a pandemic be launched against targeted populations? There are basically two ways: through selectivity in agent or selectivity in delivery system. And this is where Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger actually enter from stage left, because back in the 70s, Nixon falsely declared to the world at large that the U.S. was unilaterally abandoning its biological weapons program. And at basically the same time, he began to use his presidential position and power to covertly set up this absolutely diabolical delivery system, pandemic delivery system, which I have documented and, you know, so well in my 2021 book on the pandemic. So we've got a long-standing capability, intention and capability to attack our own citizens. And my fear is that given all of this craziness craziness, I'll just stick with that, around the Hamas situation with Israel, that they're going to go after selected populations following the destruction of Israel. And this would be the perfect way to do it, through this alternative pandemic delivery system. But that's getting kind of ahead of ourselves. I just think that we've got people in power who don't like certain kinds of races. They don't like Black people. They don't like Jews. I don't think they like indigenous people, like, you know, Native Americans. I don't think they like them very much. And I think that they are looking forward to creating a new world that has, that's basically lily white. That's what I think.
Actually, I think you got it 100% wrong. I think the idea is to exterminate the white race, Anglo-American and Western European civilization, that the Jews consider themselves not to be whites. They consider themselves to be the superior race. And surely you've noticed what's going on here in the United States, even though I recognize you're not residing geographically within the continental North American system, that all the issues that have been taking place have been anti-white. They've even frozen promotions. They're women of color, even advertising. It's all dominated by either persons of color or mixed races or even gay couples. It's bizarre. I think if you were here, Janet, you would be appalled by what we find on television today. It's all anti-white. I don't think it's remotely an idea of extinguishing other races, and it appears to me this is a Jewish agenda. I have no doubt that, flooding North America with African migrants, flooding the United States with migrants from South America and actually many other countries who are emptying their prisons. But we have an awful lot of young, fighting-age, militarily fit, even Chinese pouring over the border. They're being induced with $5,000 credit debit cards. Are being given $2,200 a month to live. They're being given food. They're being given shelter. They're being given green cards. I think the agenda is very, very different. As I've said before, I think you miss this part. If you were to assume Bibi Netanyahu, who is our commander-in-chief and in charge of foreign policy, and that George Soros is our domestic president in charge of domestic policy, where it's always been his dream before he dies to destroy America, then you'd have a pretty good understanding of what's going on. I mean, give me your thoughts about flooding the border with migrants. How does that fit into your scheme of things?
Well, you know, there's a lot of concern about that. I'm in touch with people, some homeless vets in the Chicago area, who can't even get housing at vouchers at all because of the number of migrants that are in now. I kind of look, given the pervasiveness of this alternative pandemic delivery system in the U.S. and how they can target individual households, individuals with this, I kind of look at the border situation as kind of like swinging open the door of Auschwitz and saying, come on in, it's fine in here. It's not fine at all. And actually, I think we're coming up on the top of the hour. I was hoping I would be able to discuss a bit my pending injunction against the CIA. Can we do that?
Sure. After the break, we can glad to do that. Now, are you inclined to take the official World War II narrative of the Holocaust, 6 million Jews, at face value? I've done a huge amount of research on it, and it doesn't withstand critical inspection. In fact, I say, if you've done the research, you're either a Holocaust denier or a big fat liar. I would be surprised if you haven't done the research. What's your stance on the Holocaust?
The Holocaust, my stance is that it happened, and that those who claim that it didn't happen are trying to obscure the historical trajectory towards what's happening now. That's what I think.
And you're familiar with the records of the International Committee of the Red Cross, which was keeping copious data on all the camps about the age, the sex, the religion, the ethnicity, the cause of death. They recalibrated their numbers in 1993 with a total of 296,081 dead from all causes combined, none of whom were put to death in gas chambers using Zyklon B. Did they get it wrong? We'll be right back with Janet Phelan. Stand by.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. The the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio, this fifth day of January 2024. Janet Palin is my guest. And Janet, please, as my guest, do tell us about your suit against the CIA.
Well, it's not. Okay, at this point, there have been two documents that have been sent on. One was a cease and desist letter, and one was a Form 95 claim form that must be filed prior to launching a lawsuit under the Federal Tort Claims Act. So both the documents have been sent over and have been received at this point in time. So I've got to wait out the 6 months on the claim form before suing. However, we are working right now on getting the injunction filed relevant to the cease and desist letter. Before I go into like details about what this is all about, I'd like to reference this 2014 book that I wrote, published in 2014, titled Exile, that mostly goes into the murder of my mother, Dr. Amalie Phelan, and the resultant cover-up. And it was from this rather shocking and horrifying experience that I came to go down a number of rabbit holes and to begin to really question the entire structure and intentionality of our government. So that book is titled Exile, and goes into what happened to Amalie, and it also goes into what happened to me as I moved to try to protect her. And based on this situation, which took place in, you know, like 20 years ago, I apparently have ended up on some sort of list and am now having massive problems, which I am directing my allegations at the CIA. I am doing so because, as you know, Jim, I'm outside of the U.S. I'm living in exile in Mexico, and the CIA is the agency which has dominion over foreign situations, foreign threats, foreign activities, foreign operations. I certainly am not stating that this began while I was still in the U.S. as a CIA operation, but at this point in time, it has ostensibly been transferred to the CIA, and therefore they are the appropriate agency to direct these concerns against. I believe you've had some people on your show who have claimed that they were targeted. I believe that the usual claim is that people are being targeted with electronic weapons, which is nothing close to my claim. And since I have now an enormous trove of evidence to support my claims that I have been attacked repeatedly with chemical weapons, that this has produced a health crisis of considerable magnitude, including kidney failure and other forms of effects of chemical weapons deployment. I am attempting at this point in time to get an injunction filed against the CIA so that I can live out my remaining years in some level of safety and comfort, which I certainly do not have at this point in time. So this is a draft of the cease and desist letter. I'm going to read it on the air. The final draft references certain constitutional rights that citizens are supposed to have against, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, so forth. And this draft does not reference those, but I'm going to read this. It's just a couple paragraphs. And it was a little difficult to construct this because the CIA has obviously gotten in touch, shall we say, with the authorities here. And so I needed to, this needed to be constructed in a way that not only implicates the CIA, but also implicates their operatives and officials in other countries. So here it goes. I am herein requesting that the CIA stop all covert operations relating to me at home and abroad, including all surveillance details and all involvement in chemical weapons attacks, including gassing and drone operations. In addition, the CIA and its contractors are requested to inform their assets abroad and at home to cease and desist in these operations against me. This would include negating any orders or suggestions given to state actors and assets in Latin America, as well as ceasing the distribution of chemicals used in the attacks. In addition, the CIA and its assets are to cease and desist in contacting others about me and using both positive and negative incentives to coerce others into violating the law in order to attack me and my work. This includes disrupting financial activities as well and disrupting any medical care I may seek. The above caveat concerning the relationship between the CIA and other state actors, specifically in Latin America, also applies here. So that is one draft of, close to final draft of the cease and desist letter. And given the amount of evidence that I've accrued, I am confident that the injunction will be appropriately filed. The claim form, the Form 95, details essentially three concerns. One is the deployment of chemical weapons. Two is the denial of appropriate medical care. And three is the denial of access to the legal system. So those are the claims that I'm making.
Very good, very good, very good. And you have submitted this to the CIA at this point in time.
The letter has been submitted. It was mailed with tracking, and it has been received, and there has been no acknowledgement and no cessation of activities, which are now, unfortunately, daily. For those who don't know what chemical weapons will actually do to an individual, they will, if they don't kill you outright, they will result in kidney failure. And as of July of last year, I was forced to seek some medical care in Mexico City. I was in a hospital called, it was called OSE, for a month. And I was there in diagnosed in fifth stage kidney failure, which actually means that I have a few days to live. That was in July. I consider myself extremely fortunate to still be alive, and I am seeking recognition for the attacks, and I am seeking an injunction to stop the attacks. Now, I've done some research on other individuals who have filed similar sorts of claims with the courts, and most glaringly, I have been looking. Actually, I wrote an article about what happened to Bilal Abdul Karim's lawsuit against the U.S. government. Now, Bilal Abdul Karim was actually born with the name of Darren Phelps. He was born in around Washington, D.C., and he did become a Muslim, and he also became a journalist and was covering the war scene in Syria when on several occasions he was attacked with drones and also with a Hellfire missile, and was apparently had been put on a kill list by the U.S. government. The Hellfire missile is a dead giveaway because that is a U.S. arm. And so he filed a lawsuit circa, I think it was around 2017, in a federal district court, and with the assistance of a human rights law firm in the U.K., as well as corresponding counsel in the U.S. And essentially, he's claiming that the U.S. has put him on the kill list and is trying to blow him up. And he's a U.S. citizen, and he's a journalist. Now, what was absolutely shocking about the process of the lawsuit is that it ended up being dismissed by a Judge Rosemary Collier because the U.S. came waltzing into court and claimed that this would violate the state's secret privilege. Therefore, the U.S. was not able to put on any sort of case whatsoever because it would involve state secrets. Now, what is so compelling about this is that apparently the invocation of state secrets trumps the right to life. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it doesn't matter if the U.S. invokes state secrets. So I did some research on this whole state secrets privilege stuff, and I found out something very interesting about this, Jim. There's no constitutional reference, and there's no statutory reference to any state's secrets privilege. This is something that has been Well, one of the legal scholars claimed that it was just made up, that this was first invoked in the early 1800s, having to do with Aaron Burr, and it has been used with increasing frequency by the U.S. when they simply don't want to deal with the sort of claims being made, such as were made by Darren Phelps, a.k.a. Bilal Abdul Karim. So they'll simply say, well, this is state secrets, we can't make a case, and the judge will duly dismiss the case. Now, interestingly enough, there are a couple of other notable cases where state secrets were also invoked. Most interesting to me was a 1954 case called Reynolds, in which apparently some sort of military plane blew up or went down or something, and several of the widows of men who were on the plane tried to sue the government, and the government claimed state secrets. Now, what is so interesting about the Reynolds case is that eventually it all came out, and there were no state secrets. They simply didn't, the U.S. government did not want to deal with the claim. The U.S. said, well, there was like top secret equipment on board and we can't discuss this. As it turns out, there was no top secret equipment on board. So we're seeing where a confabulated state secrets privilege is being used repeatedly now to shut down any allegations that the U.S. is involved in wrongdoing, including killing their own citizens. I find this just to be shocking. Don't you?
Yeah, I'm sorry to say, I think it's been common practice for quite a while now, and that, you know, assassinations, one means or another, coups, all that. I mean, this is the modus operandi of America. We have a sordid history, Janet, and you've documented many aspects of it, both internally, domestically, but especially, perhaps, egregiously, internationally. You know, John Perkins' Confessions of an Economic Hitman was very explicit about the use of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to hook other nations on projects they really didn't need or couldn't afford, and then to extort them for payments that they're unable to produce to get their natural resources at cut rates, and if they aren't cooperative, to send in the jackals, assassins that kill off their leaders and so forth, or foment coups, or if worse comes to worse, to send in the Marines. I hate to say how often we're Smedley Butler, the most decorated Marine Corps general in history, wrote a pamphlet, War is a Racket, explained how his entire service to his nation had actually been for the benefit of big business and major corporations, issues you understand 100%. So I think there's not a lot of surprises here. I mean, look what's going on with Donald Trump. They have all these phony lawsuits that have no basis in fact, and are not justified on the law, but they're able to weaponize the judicial system and the courts and prosecutors and trying to keep the guy off of the ballot, because while he may not be perfect, he certainly had the sense to lock down our borders. He made us energy independent. He gave us a thriving economy. And even though I would prefer that he had not, you know, moved our embassy to Jerusalem or declared the Golan Heights to be a part of Israel, they obviously regard him as an arch enemy. The Zionist Jewish establishment does not want Trump back in office, which in my opinion is the strongest possible argument you could have for him not being one of them. Because if he were, just go with the flow, by my calculation, Trump actually won over 100 million votes in 2020. Biden, maybe 37. I mean, he's enormously popular. So why not just bring him into office and then let him do your thing if he were one of you? But the fact is he's not, and therefore they are scared shitless about his assuming the office again, because He has enough experience under his belt now to know what he's up against, which he did not in the beginning. I'd welcome your take about any of these domestic. I do not see Biden on the ticket. I mean, he's so incompetent. His ratings are so low. It's not even the real guy who appears to have died in 2017. Kamala Harris, useless, absolutely frivolous and airhead. I believe that between the end of the conventions and nominating after running no campaign, after hiding in the basement as he did before, Biden is going to be replaced. He may, you know, pardon Hunter and retire from office. They're going to run Gavin Newsom, and I believe Michelle Obama is his running mate. Though Michelle, it become more problematic because even the mainstream has started to pick up on that this is actually a man who changed his registration affiliation from male to female when Barack became president and is had breast implants. I don't know if you're aware of this, Janet. I've done a huge amount of research on Michael LaVon Robinson, whom we know today as Michelle Obama. I mean, the evidence is simply overwhelming. Your thoughts about any or all of the above? They're going to try to steal the election again. Whether they can do it is a good question, but they certainly have the machines that are capable. Those Dominion machines were designed to steal elections, and they're still in use in far too many regions, precincts. For Obama, you know, in his, among his very last acts, Janet, you may or may not be aware, declared that our electoral system, part of our critical infrastructure, and put it under the control of the Department of Homeland Security, were they able to monitor elections down to the precinct level and change the vote. Absolutely outrageous. That's what this guy Obama has done for the United States, among many other traitorous acts. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that we've had a leadership problem for a long time now, and certainly since the events in Dealey Plaza. I think that most presidents don't want to end up on a slab with their brain disappeared. And are willing participants in the destruction of America. I will note that the I was sort of surprised by something you said about Trump not being acceptable by the Jewish Zionist establishment, because actually my understanding is that the Zionists were very pleased with Trump and saw him as an ally, and were actually just coming out in droves to vote for Trump. So I certainly don't see that the same way that you do.
Yeah, that's fine that we not see it the same way. But I make the point again, look, they control the media. They control the newspapers. That Rothschild own AP and Reuters, virtually all of our news is filtered through a Zionist lens, apart from local, and it's been massively anti-Trump. Perhaps from your location in Mexico, you haven't observed the extent of it, but it's been simply overwhelming. And if Trump
I know there's been a lot of anti-Trump sentiment. And but I don't think it's been coming from the quarter that you were alleging. It has been coming from. So
how can it not, Janet, when they control the media, Hollywood, the whole bit? I mean, I have a panel of 100 execs from CNN, everyone, a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, 100 execs from NBC. Everyone, a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, 100 execs from the New York Times. Everyone a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. They don't want Trump in office. If they did, the news reporting would be totally different. They'd be going with the flow. And we wouldn't have all these fabricated lawsuits, the attempts to impeach and everything else. Paul Craig Roberts had been pretty good on this, talking about how he threatens the national security complex by taking away their favorite enemy, Russia, by wanting to normalize relation with Russia, and what is known as a deep state on the other, where his Schedule F, with which you may or may not be familiar, gives him the ability to get into the senior executive service and remove individuals from office who've been there forever. I see this as a very, you know, anti-Trump as not being sufficiently controllable to follow through on the Zionist agenda. That's very much, I think, at the heart of the problem. But I certainly
I'm not sure what the Zionist agenda is, because if we take this recent incursion by Hamas into, you know, the breaching of the fence, which is not possible given the technology that exists on the fence, then we can see where there are some Zionist elements who are actually jonesing for a war which will probably destroy Israel. So what is a Zionist agenda? I mean, it you know, we've got layers and layers of falsehoods behind which exists a kernel of truth. And what I'm trying to do with my work is to focus on this kernel of truth. Now, you know, I'm very concerned that U.S. citizens, such as Bilal Abdul Karim, such as Jeffrey Epstein, such as myself, can be now murdered by the state, and there's simply nothing we can do about it. I'm very concerned about this, and I think this doesn't bode well for certain populations. And so I try to keep my focus not on some grand, you know, conspiracy involving a Zionist entity, which I don't think we can even nail down or explain what it is at this point in time. I'm simply trying to focus my attention, my energies on concrete issues, such as the fact that we now have no right to life.
Janet Phelan will be taking your call. Stand by. I'll give you the new call-in number right after this break.
We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, as most of you are no doubt aware, Mitchell, after years of unstinting faithful service, I can't tell you how wonderful he was as my producer, is engaged in other activities now, so I'm feeling it all myself. The call-in number, the new call-in number, you might want to take a note, is area code 608-957-8727. So there are 3 sevens, 608. 957-8727. We do have two callers already here. Let's begin with area code 816. Caller, please give us your first name and your state and join the conversation. 816.
It's Brian in Kansas City. I bet the second call is Paul. I just know it is. Anyway, am I right?
Yeah, I'm sure you are right. Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, Janet, because I had your name, I was able to call in Archangel Raphael. I know you might think I'm crazy, and I said, look, she's in Mexico. Give her a quick physical. He's the doctor Archangel. And he said, there's something natural you can take that will heal your problem with this chemical attack. Okay, and I said, now, is it going to be really good? And he goes, yeah, it'll really work. The problem I have now is to download what that is. I have to connect to this other girl that, you know, is like a natural healing physician, and she will tell me what it is. So if you want to know, Jim can give you my number. But when you start talking about the Holocaust, you'll get to me and Paul, because I want to point out some things that you can find on the internet, if it's still there. Adolf Hitler's private bodyguard and chauffeur, and who was with him in Spandau prison when he wrote Mein Kampf, was Emil Maurice, and he was Jewish. Okay, he was Jewish, and not only that, he dated Hitler's niece, Gelly Rabal. You can find a picture of Gelly Rabal on the internet where she's penned this little love note on the picture to Emil. Okay, so if Hitler was what they say, it's these layers of BS we get. Why would he let his niece date someone Jewish and have a Jewish bodyguard? And on Veterans Today, you can find they had a book that talked about Auschwitz-Birkenau that was owned by the Warburgs. The Warburg family owned that place. Okay, so if all this was going on, why didn't they tell the Warburgs? The other thing is, there are only 4.3 million Jews in all of Europe at the start of World War II or whatever. So it's hard to kill 6 million Jews when you've only got 4.3 million of them to deal with. And I could go on Nordhausen. I could go on about Kristallnacht, how all these things have been shown to be just total lies. So anyway, but if you want to know how to fix your chemical thing, just get the number from Jim and I'll get in touch with her, and it'll be something natural. It won't be anything from the pharmaceutical industry. So that's all I've got to say.
Janet.
Well, I appreciate your reaching out. Thank you. I really have some very strong reaction. Yeah, I'm aware that Adolf Hitler had some Jews that he chose to protect. That doesn't discount, you know, what he actually did to so many others. So I'm aware that we have alternative visions of history now, that people are saying certain things didn't happen. I'm sorry that websites like Veterans Today, which is known to be an arm's length project of the CIA, is getting so much attention from people who are really trying to seek the truth, because you're not going to get the truth from the CIA.
Well, as a former columnist for Veterans Today, who had a parting of the ways with its senior editor, Gordon Duff, over publishing about Jade Helm, which I thought was important, but he wanted me not, I can say I never was affected by the editorial board. I did my own research. I published hundreds of columns with Veterans Today. Similarly for Kevin Barrett, who is most certainly not CIA. So I think it's a much more complex situation. But it is true that Gordon himself had a history with the agency that he does not deny. Meanwhile, we have a call from 408. And Paul, unless I'm mistaken, it is you. Join the conversation.
It is indeed myself. So the one thing, I mean, there were a number of things your guest said that I found accurate. There was, I think she's reached a number of, shall we say, conclusions that are not supported by, the evidence. If we take what we see around us as at face value, but you did say there's layers of falsity. I like the way she put that. Layers of falsity, hiding a kernel of truth. And, you know, Jim, I think you and I are going to be in agreement here that we get to that kernel, we're going to find Jewish conspiracy. I mean, there can't be any doubt that the Jews, quote unquote, as a group, as a power group, won World War II. They've taken complete control of essentially the earth, if you really, get right down to it. I mean, the banking system and, the media. I mean, every single aspect of all these agendas that we're seeing is thoroughly Jewish through and through. So the idea that somehow this war has been launched to destroy Israel and that white men are somehow going to, this doesn't make any sense. There's obviously an anti-white agenda. It's clear as day. It's not just TV. I mean, obviously it goes further than that, but it doesn't make any sense for white people to be behind this anti-white agenda, which is, like I said, is clear as day. I'm not going to touch the Holocaust. You mentioned it, Jim. Brian mentioned it. I can just suggest to your guest to put in more time, because like anything else, it's subject to scrutiny. It's subject to investigation. And the talking points of the Holocaust, which is all most people know, are the talking points. And they just cannot be supported by any, real world evidence. So, having said that, I am curious as to what your guest thinks about the whole COVID. She mentioned COVID, and I just wonder if she actually believes there was an actual virus, an actual, quote, bioweapon. She talked about bioweapons and delivery systems. And I just wondered if she really thinks that there are actual viruses that are just subject to delivery systems that can cause a pandemic, because I don't.
Janet.
Right. So I have a book that was published in 2021 called At the Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic. I am not a medical professional. I am a journalist who has looked at specific delivery systems. And due to that, I do not weigh in on whether or not COVID actually exists, whether viruses exist. What I'm pointing to is that there is an alternative delivery system which can deliver death through either biological or chemical warfare. What I'm pointing to,
please do describe this delivery.
There's a book out. I have not been shy about publishing chapters from the book. You can go to Activist Post and you can look at my work there. So
can you give us a thumbnail sketch?
If you'll let me talk, I'm trying to.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, you're so walking over the delivery system.
The thumbnail involves the tweaking and reconstruction of domestic water systems. And the particular sort of tweaking involved, and there are blueprints that are published both online and also in the book to substantiate and buttress this argument. This delivery system has apparently been heavily exported by the U.S. and has been found in as far-flung places as Canada. It has been found in at least one capital city in Latin America. It has been found in Geneva, Switzerland, and it has been found in Tel Aviv.
What has been found?
The delivery system. Hello?
Here's what I'm asking you. There's a word that you use over and over. It's called delivery system, and I just want to know what that is. Everybody knows you can put stuff in the water supply.
I said it involves reconfigurations of the water system.
What does that mean, reconfigurations?
I have directed you towards articles. I've directed you towards books. I don't need articles or books.
I'm asking you to give me, talking points. What do you mean by this reconfiguration? There's pipes that carry water from a reservoir or from somewhere to businesses and homes. So what's reconfigured?
Actually, they don't. Pipes run down the center of the street. And what has concerned me and what the blueprints reveal is that there is now a double line water system. And this is being two lines running down Main Street America are actually cross-connected by service lines, which go into each residence. Now, I've done an entire show on Jim's program a couple of years ago, specifically talking about this delivery system. I encourage you to Google my name, look at an Activist Post. As I've said, I have not been shy about publishing blueprints and other supporting documentation. So I hope this answers your question.
Well, kind of, sort of. It sounds very it's nebulous to me, because the idea that they can put something in the water is nothing new. And obviously, many people believe they've been doing it for a long time, you know, not just fluoride. OK, so I'm with you on there. I just, you know, when people say such things as like a delivery system, I just want to know what it is they're referring to.
Yeah.
Okay. Distinguishes what I've located and what I've been reporting on from other concerns like fluoride is that the delivery system that I have delineated allows for selective attacks and selective delivery of whatever in the world is in that second line.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead, please. Go ahead.
So do you believe then that you yourself have been a victim of this selected delivery system for whatever chemical?
I'm not implicating my personal experience here. This is reportage. This is reported. Well,
You were saying essentially that your kidney condition is likely due to these chemical attacks. So that's what you said earlier.
Not through the water system though. She's talking about alternative modes of delivery that were affecting her biologically.
I was curious about that. Well, later on, Jim, if you want, I mean, I have actual, the guy that you talked to on that three-way phone call, you and I, Jim, he's actually reversed people's kidney disease. In fact, he's gotten people off of dialysis, which most doctors will tell you is impossible, but he's done it multiple times, basically through nutritional support. So it's possible to reverse very advanced kidney disease. So for whatever that's worth. But no, I was just curious.
I actually just want to say that, you know, as I'd mentioned, I got a death sentence in July of this year, and I have been relying on alternative means in order to keep myself viable. Interestingly enough, I want to make a comment about what happened in the hospital, because even though I was diagnosed and I do have the records, which formed part of what was already sent on to the CIA concerning the level of damage done to my kidneys through these chemical weapons deployments, I was denied medical treatment at the hospital. The hospital's name was Osei. The doctor, the nephrologist in charge of my quote-unquote treatment was Dr. Julio Arriaga, and he refused a dialysis, refused placement on a kidney transplant list, refused essentially all treatment. So I have actually been forced
What do you think was going on there, Janet? Why would he do that?
Well, as I put in the cease and desist letter, which I can pull up again.
This is part of your being targeted.
I asked the CIA to negate any orders or suggestions given to state actors and assets in Latin America, as well as ceasing the distribution of chemicals used in the attacks. So I am claiming that there is a collusion going on between state actors in Latin America and who are obeying orders that are filtering down from the CIA. I had no problems with Mexico. This whole issue that came up surrounding the murder of my mother has nothing to do with Mexico, and there is no reason for them to be continuing on any sort of vendetta against me, unless they are under suggestions and orders by a all-powerful intelligence agency up north, which is what I understand is happening.
Let me go back to Brian. Brian, do you have further thoughts?
I get it. I know what's going on there, because you won't believe this, but I'll tell you, you hear the Dracos and all this stuff. There's also the Siacar, and they're even more powerful than the Dracos, and they get in the medical profession. You find them as doctors all over, and they're tied in with the CIA, all that stuff. Those are the ones that were in the hospital when Kennedy came in, when Martin Luther King came in, when Forrestal, and it just, it's just this all-encompassing network that's controlled, and people are not aware of it. But I've had some run-ins with them, but I recognize who they are, and most people will never know. So anyway, Paul, that's what it is.
Thanks, Brian. Paul, yeah, your thoughts, Paul, further thoughts?
Well, Brian, I love Brian the way you said that. You won't believe this. So I think you could just we'll have that as an operating system here, that we won't believe it. So, but just say it anyway.
I will. It's the truth, Paul. It's true. That's why I say it.
So, Jim, were you taking notes, or the Dracos, or the reptilians went to the hospital room with Kennedy, and that's what they probably did.
I know.
No, it was the Sea of Car. The Dracos weren't there, Paul.
By the way, yeah.
They put the Sea of Cars in charge of that.
By the way, we're not making this a debate over the Holocaust, but I did have Fred Luchter as a speaker at my Volkswagen Conspiracies conference here on the 16th and 17th of December. You can find his presentation on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer, on my Twitter account, at Jim Fetzer, where Fred was a leading expert on gas chambers in the United States at the time of the Ernst Zundel trial and was sent to Germany to review the camps and their facilities and came back with an extensive report during his second trial in 1988 that there was nothing at any of the camps that could have remotely functioned as a gas chamber. I would have thought that was the end of it, but no, the myth lives on. Janet, you're my guest. You have the opportunity to say some final words here while we still have opportunity, and I'm very pleased you were able to join me today. Please.
Yeah. Well, since we seem to have been focusing on the Jews and on Israel during this conversation, I would like to say that I think, personally, that evil is an equal opportunity employer. And it's very easy to focus on a group that is small, that has a different religion, that possibly wears different clothes. Women, I think Jewish women wear wigs. It's very possible. It's very easy to focus on a group that appears to be different.
Yeah, but we're not focusing on them because it's easy. We're focusing on them because that's where the evidence leads. To make this naive statement about, well, it's easy to do this or it's easy to do that, it does not address the issue, the elephant in the room. This is 2,000 plus years of history of many different cultures and many different people.
Hang on, Paul.
The elephant in the room is thoroughly addressed by my 2014 book, Exile. I encourage you to read it. It might give you a wake-up call.
Well,
anything
does it
else?
Name the Jew? Does your book name the Jew? I'm just curious. I mean, I'm not against reading. And by the way, Jim, I'll have you know, just I'm the same as you. I know for a fact that a lot of people have just not had contact with a lot of different subject material on the various topics that you've covered over the years. So I'm always willing to give somebody the benefit of the doubt if they haven't come across such things. In other words, whether it's 9/11 or the moon landing or Sandy Hook or the Holocaust, okay, fine. But when somebody starts to make a statement such as, you know, this what I call general platitude about, well, Jewish people dress different and, you know, they wear wigs and it's easy to focus on them because they're minority. This is just a ridiculous nonsense, okay? There's absolute positive evidence of this, okay? There's written testimony.
Positive evidence in Exile that what you're saying is a hill of beans.
Of what?
Hill of beans.
So in other words, written history. Is full of beans. Okay, gotcha.
Janet, what's your thoughts about 9/11? Was 9/11 19 Islamic terrorists led by Osama bin Laden?
Absolutely not.
Tell us about 9/11.
Tell you about 9/11? 9/11 was an inside job.
Yes.
Yeah.
Were the plans used?
Buy-in for who is to benefit? Would you be agreed that it was an Israeli op, basically? It was to benefit Israel and draw the U.S.
It was a U.S. op. It was a U.S. op that certainly was involved complicity and silence of other countries, but yes, it was a U.S. op. I was actually, I touched on 9/11 in Exile because during the events of September 11th, I was living in West Hollywood with an undercover agent who never disclosed to me that he was an undercover agent. We actually figured this out at some later point in time, and documents supporting his agenthood are actually published in the Appendix of Exile. So on the morning of September 11th, I actually sat with my undisclosed agent boyfriend to watch the events take place. And it was clear to me at that time that something was wrong with the official story. And it was clear because of the time it took, which was actually almost no time at all, for the media to announce who the perpetrator was. Actually, having worked in journalism my entire life, I am aware that there are certain steps that need to be taken in order for the perpetrator to be determined. The FBI has to do their investigation. They have to meet. What are we going to tell the American people? You don't have it flash up on the screen, warp speed like that. There was collusion all the way up the line in terms of media as well as government.
So. Of course. And who controls the media?
Can I comment?
By the way, Janet.
Yeah.
Can I comment?
Sure, go ahead. Sure.
My brother was a flight instructor in the Air Force, and 2 weeks before 9/11, he got a call from two Israeli pilots that he trained that said, whatever you do in 2 weeks, do not go to New York City. So that's kind of beyond the spin. That's close to home when that happens.
A big hit. Janet, listen, I really appreciate your coming on. You have a wealth of background. We don't agree on every issue. Some strongly disagree, but I sure appreciate your contributions and your efforts and your publications and joining me once again here today. And you have the final word.
Well, I just want to thank you for having me on, Jim. I was aware before doing the show that we do have areas in which we disagree and areas in which we agree. And I appreciate the time you've given me to discuss my perspective. And also my plight here, because, you know, being attacked on a daily basis now with high-level chemical weapons is a nasty situation to be in.
Yes, yes, yes. Brian, Paul, thank you very much for your calls. Everyone out there, spend as much time with your family and friends as possible.
Recording stop.
We will not comply with the institution's sick illusion. No, it won't be televised. Welcome to the revolution. We will not comply with the institution's sick illusion. No, it won't.
travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday.